Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
In my tireless pursuit of answers, I found fresh questions of terror. Comfort is an alien notion to me. I've always been afraid, always failing to still my brain's ever-whirring cogs. But from a young age, I aimed to cease my mind's endless worrying. I poured every ounce of my energy into becoming an engineer. It has always eased my nerves to fix things. Of course, nothing was ever enough. I needed absolute certainty, and I wasn't going to find that on our little green rock. Naturally, I looked to the stars. In the early 2000s, shortly after graduating from Cambridge University, I moved to America and secured a job at NASA. I wanted to be part of something bigger than me, an organization focused on exploring the deepest crevices of the universe. The date was January 2nd, 2023. It was a day unlike any other. The office was filled with the excitable chatter of my colleagues, folk who, typically, would have their heads silently buried in paperwork. The air on this particular day, however, was filled with a jittery, magnetic energy. "Connor, you'll never guess what just leaked," Adam eagerly said, motioning for me to follow. I shrugged and followed my friend out of the office. "What's happening?" I asked. "You're going to lose your mind," my colleague replied. We made our way into one of the compound's main facilities, a building which housed NASA's assembly line of rockets. I had a hunch that Adam's exciting news might be related to DM-50, the dozen minus rockets. After all, the bulky vessel was nearing completion. No low-level employees had been given any inkling as to what purpose the spacecraft would serve. My colleague and I rounded the corner of the vessel, and we found Dr. Stanley Jacobs talking to a few physicists. He was a graying, pale-faced fellow with chapped skin, the sort of man who had physically aged beyond his years. He could have been 64 or 46. The wary-faced man groaned at the sight of Adam, but my friend didn't care. He was fixated on the screen behind the physicist. It depicted various graphs and charts, a foreign language to me. "Everybody's been biting Stanley's ear off after he mistakenly forwarded an email to Jenny in accounting. Last year, Jacobs discovered an anomaly at the edge of our galaxy," Adam gleefully whispered. "An unidentified phenomenon that vaguely resembles a black hole, though its physical makeup is unlike anything previously discovered in human history, and NASA has been intercepting frequencies from the other side. Using telescopic data, they've created musical tones which sound like, well, who knows, storms on unseen planets, forms of alien communication, a parallel version of our reality perhaps. This sounds like fiction. Why didn't we hear about it when Jacobs found the anomaly a year ago?" I asked. My colleague shrugged. "You know what the media's like. This could be huge, or it could be nothing. But Jacobs is suggesting that it might be a tear between universes." "Hypothetically," I scoffed. Though secretly, my interest was piqued. "Come on, Connor. You're always talking about the mysteries of the universe. Well, it turns out that there's more than one universe," Adam said, "and Frank heard that they're planning an expedition with the DM-50. I told you something big was happening. Why else would they have contracted Dozen Minus? It's unofficial, highly classified technology." My heartbeat started to quicken as I contemplated what my friend had said. Parallel universes, I thought. Could these distant worlds offer the answer I've always wanted? The small group of physicists eventually dispersed, and Adam nodded his head at Stanley. Talk to him about the expedition. He didn't want anything to do with me, but this could be your shot to see space, my friend whispered before walking away. May I help? Dr. Jacobs asked, overhearing us. Does the DM-50 expedition have any openings for engineers? I asked. The man sighed. You shouldn't know about that, but you're not the first person to ask. This day has been... You're going to explore the anomaly, aren't you? I asked, eagerly interrupting the physicist. Did you hear something? Wait, are you even an engineer? You're not some government servant on a mission to shut down this project, are you? Dr. Jacobs asked, lifting an eyebrow. No, I just need to be on that ship, sir. You likely already have plenty of engineers attached to the project, but... We do, so I wouldn't get your hopes up, the man interjected, packing his briefcase. I won't pretend to be some indispensable genius, I said, but this is more than a job to me. I don't really care about NASA. I've always wanted answers to... Well, everything. The man carefully examined me. What's your name? Dr. Jacobs asked, pulling a piece of paper out of his coat pocket. Connor Bridges, I said, composing myself. The physicist nodded and scribbled my name. There aren't any official openings, Connor, but I know that look in your eyes. It's what guided me to this place, too. It's what prompted me to chase Harriet's eye. Harriet's eye? I asked. The man solemnly nodded. The name of the anomaly. My late daughter. Sorry, I quietly replied. Jacobs cleared his throat. The DM-50 could always use an extra engineer. My eyes glistened, and I immediately accepted the offer. I couldn't quite wrap my brain around the idea of going to space. Now, of course, months after my voyage of terror, I tried to pretend it never happened. After 10 months of training, launch day arrived. Dr. Stanley Jacobs and Dr. Elizabeth Farrow, his research partner, had been developing the logistics of the mission for the better part of 2 years. Our stealth vessel, the DM-50, would venture to the edge of the Milky Way, undetected by the people of Earth, and we would send various automated research vessels into Harriet's eye. Given promising results, a manned mission would follow. It was an airtight plan. The launch was a surreal experience, sitting in a near-silent ship equipped with cloaking technology. We left Earth behind, not a soul on the ground watched. It was a week-long journey. Using dozen miners' technology, we achieved the impossible. We not only travelled to the farthest reach of the Milky Way, but we did so within an unthinkably fast time frame. The reason for Dr. Jacobs' hurry would eventually become horribly clear. From within the window of DM-50, the crew surveyed Harriet's eye with doe-eyed, blissfully unaware faces, a gaggle of schoolchildren dazzled by the mysteries of space. And as we approached, the eye grew from a blackened blemish on the horizon into a ginormous wound that had splintered the very fabric of reality. A hauntingly spectacular sight. The unmanned vessels were launched once we reached a suitably near yet safe distance from Harriet's eye. We watched as the tiny metallic blobs jettisoned from DM-50. Then, one by one, the three vessels were swallowed by the blackened mouth. We found ourselves hovering in space at the edge of oblivion, waiting for the robotic explorers to return. The majority of low-level workers had nothing to do but twiddle thumbs. We couldn't proceed until the data from the unmanned vessels had been retrieved and analysed. "Not quite the adventure you imagined, Mr. Bridges," Stanley Jacobs asked, grinning. The two lead physicists sat on the opposite end of the canteen table. I smiled at the pair of them, whilst hurriedly finishing my mouthful of food. It wasn't often that lowly crew members would have the opportunity to talk to the ever-elusive lead physicists. "Actually, it's no different from a day in the office, sitting around waiting for something to do," I said. Stanley laughed. "Well, it's just as tedious for Elizabeth and me." "Too right, but I enjoy lunch breaks because I get to spend some time with people other than him," Dr. Elizabeth Farrows chirped. "I hate to pry, but, well, have you made any progress?" I asked. "I won't pretend to understand the physics of this expedition, but..." "Don't be so modest, Connor," Elizabeth said. "You're an engineer. I'm sure you understand more than you pretend to know." "He's a mysterious egg," Jacobs chuckled. "Did you know that he twisted my arm to get on this mission? He was almost as determined as me. Almost." Elizabeth raised an inquisitive eyebrow. "Yes, I seem to remember him showing up quite late in training. Were you keen to see action, Connor?" The woman had kind eyes. Elizabeth was middle-aged, possibly the same age as Stanley, but the years had been kinder to her soft-skinned, rosy-cheeked face. She reminded me of my late mother. Something about a velvety voice encouraged me to open up. "It wasn't about the adventure, Dr. Farrow. I've just always been afraid," I said. "I've always wanted answers to unanswerable questions, and this phenomenon seems fundamentally juxtaposed to the reality which surrounds it." Before either of the physicists could reply, our food tray slid to the right as we did, and everybody cried in confusion as the bodies were limply flung to the side of the unexpectedly leaning vessel. My temple connected with the edge of the table, drawing blood, and I gripped either side of the canteen bench until my knuckles whitened. Dozens of dazed, injured workers clambered to their feet. We all hurried to our respective stations, ready to assess the damage. Though the ship corrected its balance, it continued to quake uncontrollably. And as we ran to the engineering office, my crew members and I shuddered at the sight of complete blackness beyond DM50's windows. The stars and planets had disappeared. "Brace for impact," a voice shrieked over the ship's intercom. The ship's outer body groaned under the strain of seismic pressure, and I tumbled to the office's metallic floor. The other engineers and I clutched at any fixed thing we could find, and we braced for our lives as DM50 finally came to a blunt, jarring halt. Everybody lay as still as possible. Murmurs of pain echoed around the office. Light fixtures flicked unstably, and various alarms sounded in a clamorous cacophony. "All personnel, report to the main bridge," a voice announced over the tannoy. My fellow wounded engineers stumbled weakly to the corridor outside our office, but we did not walk to the main bridge. We speechlessly filled the corridor, and each of us stared out of the window, and each of us stared out of the windows which lined the walkway. Beyond DM50, there lay a near colourless hellscape. The only light stemmed from a luminous blue orb in the distance. "A white dwarf," one woman said, gasping. "Do they usually look like that?" a man asked. The edges of the orb seemed to dance erratically, and the ocean beyond our ship was littered with tidal waves of crumbling rocks. Stray pieces clattered against the windows of DM50, and then I realized that one of the larger distant rocks was a planet. It appeared to be cleanly split down the middle, as if it were two halves of a cracked coconut shell. This foreign place was not the Milky Way. The very laws of physics seemed to contradict our reality. "We entered Harriet's eye," a man whispered. "It's another universe," somebody muttered. "All personnel to the main bridge," the Tannoy voice repeated urgently. Snapping out of the existential fever which had seized our bodies, the engineering crew hurried through the walkways of the ship, and we joined everybody in the main bridge area. Beyond the chatting crowd, I could see Dr. Jacobs and Dr. Farrow standing sheepishly behind Captain Poulton. "Quiet," the captain bellowed. The entire crew immediately complied. We tried to fixate on our bearded, stern-faced leader, but our eyes kept wandering to the swirling kaleidoscope of colors and bombardment of rocks beyond the bridge's main viewpoint. "An unidentifiable force has pulled us into the anomaly," Captain Poulton said. "We're working towards immediately returning home, and we do not know what we might find here. The data has not yet been retrieved from the unmanned vessels, so these are uncharted waters." Anxious murmuring resumed. "Enough," the captain shouted. "Before we attempt to enter the anomaly again, we must deem DM-50 to be shipshape. I'll leave that to our engineers, but time is of the essence. Isn't that right, Dr. Jacobs?" There was a disquieting tension between the lead physicist and the captain. Dr. Jacobs cleared his throat. "The anomaly is shrinking. We should have told you that we have a limited window in which to explore what lies beyond it." "That's not all," Captain Poulton growled. Stanley cleared his throat nervously, but Elizabeth placed a delicate hand on his shoulder. "We have entered a dying universe, one that is collapsing on itself," she said, prompting a gasp of horror from the crowd. "The anomaly is our only exit, and it will soon be closed for good." Dr. Jacobs sighed. "I believe that Harriet's eye might well be more than a rip in the lining of reality. It might be the crunch point for this universe. All matter in this reality will collide here." Anarchy ensued. Crew members hurled abuse at the physicists, and the few furious individuals lunged at Jacobs. The captain and several security officers restrained the enraged crew members. "We can't change what has been done," Captain Poulton yelled, shoving the mob backwards. "When we return to Earth, Dr. Jacobs and Dr. Farrow will stand trial for their crimes. Until then, we have one objective: save every last person aboard this ship." The crew worked tirelessly over the following hours, but things only worsened. We were sitting ducks at the entrance to the anomaly, the ever-closing seal between two universes, that became apparent as the ship's body began to wail painfully. The onslaught of rocks loudened against the metalwork and reinforced glass panes. DM-50 began to quake on a near constant basis, and whenever I would glance out of the ship's windows, I became acutely aware of a burgeoning light in the distance. The sinister, swirling glow of a trillion galaxies converging, the incoming flurry of long-dead planets and moons. The universe was collapsing, and we were at the epicenter. I eventually slumped into my bunk bed at the brink of exhaustion, but I found myself unable to shut my eyes. Eager to busy myself, I switched to my terminal to run a few diagnostics for the evening. The sooner we could give the captain the green light to go, the better. I was surprised to find a notification in my inbox. It was a day-old video message from Adam. "Hey Connor, I've been bored out of my mind. I'm still upset that Dr. Jacobs wouldn't let me join the crew, so I decided to do some research on the big man. I talked to Frank in IT because he owed me a favor, and he let me look at some of the transmissions that Jacobs has been deciphering. NASA received signals from the anomaly that seemed communicative, Connor, and it was a two-way flow." Jacobs responded. "He talked to something. You need to ask him about that." The thought of receiving a message from alien life, whether in our universe or another, had once filled me with such excitement, but I was filled with the inexplicable dread by the idea of Jacobs communicating with some unseen intelligence. It could have been the secrecy surrounding the communication. Jacobs hadn't told anyone that he'd already found something sentient beyond Harriet's eye. Why? My gut instinct was to confront him. I slid out of bed, got dressed, and left the engineering quarters. The ship was eerily quiet on my walk to the main laboratory, other than the roar of space debris, which had become a form of white noise. As expected, I found Dr. Jacobs hunched over at his desk and busying himself with work. The white glow of the screen illuminated the man's gaunt, possessed face. He hardly looked human. "Why didn't you tell us?" I asked. "The expedition would never have been greenlit," Dr. Jacobs muttered without looking up. "Good," I said. "We never would have faced such horror." Dr. Jacobs removed his glasses and eyed me with disappointment. "What happened to that young man who wanted answers?" "We're not going to get any answers here," I said. "Certainly not about that thing you heard in the darkness." Stanley Jacobs froze, eyeing me for a few seconds as droplets of sweat collected on his furrowed brow. "How did you know about that?" he whispered. "He only spoke to me." I shivered. "He?" Stanley's frown lifted as he realized that I knew nothing. "Go to bed, Mr. Bridges," he said, returning his gaze to the laptop. "What were you hoping to find?" I asked. The man scoffed. "Another universe, Connor. Something greater than us." And I calculated that we had no more than a couple of years before Harriet's eye would seal forever. "A couple of..." I stopped mid-sentence. "How long do we have before this reality collapses, Jacobs? Months? Weeks?" "Days," Stanley whispered. Fists clenching of their own accord, I stormed across the lab and towered over the man, who quickly shrank into his desk chair. "What could we possibly learn in days, Stanley? You brought us here to die," I barked. "I wanted this to happen sooner," he retorted, "but the airheads at NASA had to plan carefully. Unofficial projects are always messy." "Especially when they result in countless deaths," I said. "The anomaly almost tore the ship in half. We might not even be able to fix it. We might die. Don't you care?" "I have every faith in you," Dr. Jacobs said, returning his gaze to the numbers on his screen. "And I have every faith in you," I replied. "You're lucky to even be here," the physicist snarled. As we continued the back and forth discussion, our voices gradually raised. It was only after 10 minutes of running in circles that we realized we were competing not with each other, but with the growing sound outside the ship. And when we turned our heads to the laboratory windows, Stanley and I gasped in unison. The dying universe's void was filling with light at an increasingly rapid pace, and DM50's trembling foundations felt less stable with every passing second. "No, this isn't right. We should have time," Stanley breathlessly cried. "I still have so much data to collect. I need to..." "All personnel to stations," a voice announced over the intercom. "Flight to Harriet's Eye will commence in 5 minutes. Brace for impact." "We've barely run 50% of the necessary diagnostics," I said. "Who cares about the ship, Connor?" Dr. Jacobs manically cried. "This is greater than anything in human history. This is..." "What are you?" The wispy, disembodied voice rattled sharply around my skull, like a coin stuck in a jar. "It's me. I'm here," Stanley whispered. "I did as you asked." The physicist noticed my horrified expression, and he realized I'd heard the voice too. He wasn't as special as he thought himself to be. I became aware of the fact that all sound outside the ship had ceased. The terrifying convergence of galaxies continued beyond the window, but there was quiet. Only that haunting whisper permeated the silence. A new land to conquer, the voice hissed. Thank you for showing me the door. I want to see her, Dr. Jacobs wailed, throwing his arms outwards. You said I'd see Harriet. She is still in the place of all dead things. Come closer. Let me show you, the chilling voice said. Outside the window, amidst the multicolored glare of approaching galaxies, I saw two forming bodies. Red, gassy spheres of biblical proportions, and as black specks emerged from their centers, I realized what they were. Eyes of unfathomable enormity. I tried to scream, but my quivering, narrowing throat was unwilling. Could it have been strangled, perhaps, by that paranormal deity? Black tendrils emerged from the abyss of the universe's ever-nearing edge. They curled forwards and took the shape of colossal, godlike fingers. Fingers that were reaching towards us. The ship suddenly lurched forwards. The captain, who had looked upon the horror in the depths of space, commenced our voyage into Harriet's eye. Thankful for the slightest hope, I looked to the sobbing physicist beside me.
Harriet, he cried, you promised.
With a thunderous clap, the tremendous, ear-shattering sound of the collapsing universe returned, as if the terrifying entity, with eyes like blazing gateways to hell, were roaring in fury at our attempted escape. Those ever-stretching fingers soared towards our spacecraft, and DM-50 began to jolt from side to side. A trillion swirling lights soared towards our ship, as the universe's collapse quickened. I screamed as I finally fathomed the horror of being crushed by a universe. But then, the pulling began. The pull of the shriveled, near-closed anomaly. Blackness began to envelop our ship. We were entering Harriet's eye. As Stanley and I steadied ourselves against the nearby desk, I closed my eyes and thought of home. A little green rock that I had shunned for my entire life. In that moment, it was the only thing I wanted. Following an explosion of sound, everything stopped. All sound, all movement. And when I opened my eyes, we were surrounded by life. We had returned to our universe. There were bright, burning stars in the distance, fully formed planets, serene tides of space that gladly carried us home. A long, quiet journey home. I rushed to the laboratory window to eye the fading anomaly. Did it close or simply fade from view? I still don't know. Part of me believes in the darkened distance of space. I might have seen those terrible black tendrils slinking through the tear between realities, the hand of a god fleeing its dying universe to claim another. Dr. Jacobs and Dr. Farrow await trial for what they did. I've been denied visitation privileges, but I need to see them. I need to understand the last thing he said to me. It lives.